Good morning, and welcome to the United Lodge of Theosophists here in Philadelphia. Now, we as Theosophists have formed an association to keep these ideas alive in the community and alive in ourselves. So to do that, we have formed an association in which on these teachings, we are involved. Now, the basis for this is the self-realization of who we are. And that realization leads to the understanding that universal brotherhood is a fact in nature, that all of life is conscious and alive. We do this by having two weekly meetings open to the public, free, and run by volunteers who take it upon themselves the responsibility of keeping these ideas alive. Now, that being said, everyone is different. And we understand things differently. But what we are trying to keep before the public, these true ideas that aren't mine, aren't any of yours, but they're all of ours. And it's a shared knowledge. It's a shared understanding. It's a shared brotherhood. So, we keep to the straight line theosophical teachings. So, on Wednesday evenings, we study some theosophical book or magazine, and presently we're reading together The Ocean of Theosophy, which is a compilation of news articles that was presented to the public. That has been compiled and put forward in a book form, but it just simply is an outline of the secret doctrine, which is a boundless manuscript. So in doing that, on Wednesday evenings, we are taking up a section which deals specifically with these ideas. And in order so that the mind can see or express itself in ways that it has been hindered for centuries. It's a use or a capacity of every human being to be wide-seeing. So, on Wednesdays, we keep to a strict theosophical subject that we all can read together and discuss and hopefully come to a better understanding of the philosophy. Because through our discussion, our eating of this information, our considering these ideas, we need to digest it. And speaking about these ideas in a public forum gives an opportunity for the soul to feel the energy that is brought forth in our very understanding, because we are doing it together. We are aiding and helping each one of ourselves, and we're helping ourselves. So, then on Sundays, we take up a wide theosophical range of subjects. During the month of November, it's theosophical principles. And today we're taking up the evidence for reincarnation. So, And doing that, what we will do, we'll have these ideas presented. But before that, just reminder that there are time constraints. We are open on Wednesday evenings from our classes from 7:30 to 8:30. It's open prior to those hours so that people can come in and use the library. And if you are so inclined, talk to someone at the book table before you leave. And on Sundays, the library is not open, but our classes run from 11 to 12. And we try to keep promptly to that hour. I take Mr. Judge and his in the teachings, and HPB is setting up a cycle is a good for our spiritual development. Set up a cycle within your life. So, in an effort to do that, today we're going to talk about evidence for reincarnation. And besides the obvious, but we won't want to take away the surprise. Because we're going to find out exactly what evidence there is for reincarnation. If we've ever thought about it, which I think we shall after this short presentation, evidence for reincarnation.
Today we have a subject that truly allows for many avenues of approach. Initially, I was going to bring along some examples, but this room is full of them. It's been said that an ending is just a new beginning in disguise. That rightly describes the ancient belief in the soul's immortality and continuity through reincarnation. The spiritual eye of light is more and more activated as we progress through spiritual evolutions, wisely appointed reincarnations. Such advancements are necessary to finally achieve conscious godhood, in the words of William Q. Judge, all the while living in a human existence on Earth. In actuality, the idea of reincarnation is found in the oldest traditions of Western civilization, as well as being taught throughout the ancient Near East and Orient. And there is solid evidence that during its first centuries, Christianity did indeed impart what it had learned about the pre-existence of souls and their re-embodiment. The earliest Christians, especially those who were members of one or other of the Gnostic sects, such as the Valentinians and the Ophites, included re-embodiment among their important teachings. For them, it enabled fulfillment of the law of karma. Reincarnation also provided the means for the soul to purify itself from the muddy qualities resulting from its immersion in matter and the egoism we have developed in this journey. Today it's hard to believe, but nonetheless, that until about 130 years ago, hardly anyone in the Western world had heard of reincarnation. This, however, hadn't always been the case, as a belief in reincarnation had flourished in the West in ages past and had even been part of early Christianity until it was officially declared heretical. I always have a problem with that word, sorry, by the church in the 6th century AD. After that point, the concept of reincarnation vanished almost entirely from the Western consciousness until it was reintroduced by Madame Blavatsky and the Theosophical movement, alongside other distinctly Eastern teachings such as karma and oneness and divinity of all life. The truth and reality of incarnation was swiftly perceived and seized by many, and before long the word and the basic idea behind it entered into the mainstream. Before we go too far afoot, let's have an understanding of just what reincarnation is. Reincarnation means the same thing as re-embodiment and rebirth. It is the human soul returning to the earth again and again and taking up residence each time in a new physical body with the purpose to continue the soul's progressive journey of inner evolution, advancement, development, and unfoldment. Death is not the end, and birth is not the beginning. There are a few possibilities regarding what happens to us when we die. There is the view of the atheists and the materialists who say that we are nothing more than a lump of soulless, meaningless matter, and that we simply cease to be when the physical body dies. Then there is the one life only view held by some religions who maintain that the soul only lives once on earth, and that after the body dies, the soul either goes to heaven for all eternity or burns in hell for all eternity. The religions which teach this concept usually insist that they are the only right religion and that only the people belonging to that particular religion will go to heaven. Another possibility is that of an ongoing process of reincarnation. About 30% of people in the West say that they believe in reincarnation, and it has been a standard belief in much of the East for thousands of years, having its origin in Hinduism, which is one of the oldest religions in the world, if not the oldest. It is also a central feature of Buddhism and other Indic religions. And as the self-conscious decision-making human beings that we are, we have the power and the freedom to decide which of these sounds the most reasonable, and plausible to us. The general opposition of some theologians in the last century is ebbing away as their successors take a more open-minded stance on the subject. Clergymen of varying denominations are beginning to endorse the ancient teachings about the pre-existence of the soul, re-embodiment in general, and reincarnation in particular. In Remembrances of Past Lives, an article that appeared in the New York Times, Newsweek's religion editor, Lisa Miller, takes a look at our nation's growing belief in reincarnation. Interesting, according to the Times piece, women are more likely to believe in reincarnation than men. This emerging belief in reincarnation is a steep departure from the traditional Judeo-Christian narrative that most Americans are familiar with. In religious terms, the human narrative, birth, life, death, and rebirth, has for millennia been relatively straightforward in the West. You were born, you lived, you died. After a judgment, you went to heaven or you went to hell. Eternity was the end. No appeals were allowed. But nearly a billion Hindus and half a billion Buddhists, not to mention the ancient Greeks, certain Jews, and a few Christians have for thousands of years believes something entirely different. Theirs is, as the theologians say, a cyclical view. You're born, you live, you die, and because nobody's perfect, your soul is born again. Not in another location or sphere, and not in any metaphorical sense, but right here on earth. Of the many great examples, evidence, if you will, for reincarnation, was a blind and autistic child slave from Georgia. His name was Thomas Wiggins. He was better known as Blind Tom. He was one of those perplexing geniuses of the 19th century that William Q. Judge wrote about in support of the doctrine of reincarnation. Mr. Judge, in Chapter 10 of The Ocean of Theosophy, speaks of Blind Tom, who could not by any possibility have a knowledge of the piano. Yet he had great musical power and knew the present mechanical musical scale of the piano. His extraordinary playing skills rocketed him to fame and fortune, and he toured the world. Furthermore, he was the first African-American to perform at the White House. The president at the time was James Buchanan, the only president from Pennsylvania. And by the way, Abraham Lincoln was a presidential nominee at the time. Mark Twain saw Blind Tom perform and followed his travels so that he could see him every chance he got. Mark Twain called him an inspired idiot who could play one tune with his left hand, play a different tune with his right hand, and sing at the same time a different tune altogether. And if that wasn't enough, he allowed the audience to pick the key he should perform in. Before I close, I would be remiss if I left out one of the more common arguments against reincarnation, and that is that we don't remember our past experiences. But there is a memory other than that stored up among the cells of our brain. Skills or capabilities to do or understand certain areas of thought or activity, often evident in early childhood, surely portend a resumption from a past knowledge. Does it really matter what the name of a personality was if the quality expressed through that lifetime continues into the present, modified, of course, according to the kind and intensity of the earlier period of self-expression? We so often think of life and death as a pair of opposites, whereas in reality, life is a continuum, with birth and death the two doorways into and out of our earth phase. Birth, death, and rebirth. The cycle turns and completes itself over and over until we, the great alchemists of our own lives, until we refine the dross in our nature into the pure gold of spirit.
Yes.
Well, the thing that came, thought that came to our mind is the tradition of naming our newborn children after an ancestor, whether it be grandmother, grandfather, or even great-grandfather. Do you think that that's a hint or points in that direction of reincarnation as a fact?
Well, we would sometimes consider that just a a way of physically passing down who you are. Now, but that in itself creates a self-conscious being.
Okay. You even named him Joe Wilson Jr. Boy, he looks just like his great-grandfather.
Well, we like to feel part of something. And that is one way that we have developed being part of something. But we're all part of something. You know, we've lost the sense of community, which we had before, as a matter of survival. Now we don't need to survive with anyone else. We can do it alone. But it is very lonely. So these realizations or these understandings are something that one experiences. Okay? So it becomes part of his knowledge. Yes, in the blue. Yeah.
Hello, I was listening to the conversation about reincarnation, and I heard the gentleman. I'm not sure your name.
Well, we're really going to concentrate on ideas.
Yeah, I know.
All right, and so
the idea that I thought was left out was he was saying that when you reincarnate, it's always on this earth. But from what I understand, from Blavatsky, the planetary doctrine is kind of a discussion of both the transmigration in the here and now and the reincarnation in life afterwards. So I kind of thought the doctrines of Blavatsky were kind of in conflict at one point.
Well, there is a lot of influence from other planets, from the solar system itself. But we are bound to this earth. We are bound to it. It is our nursery. It's where we learn and experience. So we can understand why we're here, what we're doing here, and where self-consciousness can be evolved. In the back.
And even those who have accomplished all there is to be done on this planet don't leave. They stay and help their younger brothers wake up to their own purpose. So it isn't until perhaps the next period that they would be on a different planet.
You know, it would, as we understand karma and reincarnation, if our deeds were performed here, it's here that we have to straighten them out and experience them so that, you know, that, yeah, we're here and we're doing a great job. Yes.
Perhaps the comment, HPP's planetary doctrine, we're not sure exactly what's meant by that, but if what's meant by that is the rounds, the different globes of the Earth. Yes, we definitely reincarnate into different aspects or different states of consciousness and follow the Earth, but that's a whole study of the evolution of the Earth. Her teaching as far as reincarnation really is, we are here because we have the purpose to be here, and we're not attracted to different planets after a particular life until this Earth is finished, then there'll be literally a reincarnation of this Earth elsewhere.
Well, I think the Gita says that, and H.P.B. reiterates it, that we're on a journey here to self-consciousness. Hey, and here we are. Now what are we doing? Where does it go from here? We have to become self-realized consciousness. We have to realize what and who we are. The mind of the race is awakening. And what we see is people don't know who they are. And they seem lost in the chaos. So that fundamental idea of who we are, must be kept within yourself. You have to come to an understanding of who you are, and that weathers all storms, all change.
What decides or who decides what the next life will be, male or female, wealthy or rich, where we're going to live? How is that?
Well, I'm sure it's all predicated on our own actions, okay? That we are not so different from each other. And we have likes and dislikes of that. And, you know, everything is an amalgamation of feelings. And we keep on drawing them to ourselves when we don't realize what they truly are. Just feelings. That's not who we are. It's just a feeling. It's a thought. It's a belief. But what we consider to be real is how we live our life. And what we see is not real. So how do you live in a world with what you see is not real?
Well, we lie to ourselves then.
No, not anymore. I thought you said you stopped.
Okay.
No?
The thing about the next life, the philosophy tells us that it's not linear. The problems and things you have in this life or the ones you solved in this life are not necessarily going to be the conditions in the next life, that it's based upon the fact that we've been here 18 million years. We've set up a lot of causes, and we will be facing perhaps something completely new and different. But what we learned in this life, we can then apply in the next life and perhaps go through some of these changes faster. So it's not linear. It's based on what you have thought, felt, acted upon, and wanted. It's always what we wanted. We just didn't know it was such a price.
Well, you say when something we've learned, like we've studying hard, and no, it's something that you know. You learn, and then all of a sudden, yes, it is true. Yes.
We've often wondered how is it that some folks are born into families who nurture them, educate them, feed them, and raise them in loving ways, and others are born in places in the earth where they may or may not make it to 3 years old because of nutrition. And the answer to that for us could never be, well, God works in mysterious ways, that's his call, it just doesn't work out. But it's equally hard to see that, you know, people are reincarnated in these dire situations because of what they did too. We don't know if it's right, if it's wrong, it's just an observation. It's hard to grasp that.
Well, we cannot judge the suffering of another, why they suffer, because we really want to know why, because we don't want to do that. But these are indigenous people. They are a civilization, but they're a civilization that has not been nourished. You know, mankind has built thousands, if not millions, of civilizations. 18 million years where we have cooperated, and built pyramids. They're found all over South America. They're found all over Europe, in Egypt. It's just that the length of time, how we judge life, is limited. But it is not. It is illimitable. Because it's part of that abstract absolute. That's what we are a part of. So we are eternal beings. And for us to incarnate into matter, into darkness, in order to bring forth all of life to a higher state of consciousness by contact through higher consciousnesses. We are coming in contact with all of our, look at us. Look at our body. And we control the body with this mind. But we are born and we grow and, you know, and all there's all these other people doing that, you know. Well, we're a divine being. We are trying to develop that physical form that best expresses our spiritual body or spiritualness. So we see matter struggling, but that is what life is. It's resistance. Resistance, and therefore we create action. Action creates results. So as Gita says, that we have to find action in inaction, and inaction in action. We have to understand why we act. In the very back.
Well, we were thinking a good example to help us understand the depth of it, is when we go through different stages, like we have our waking state, we have our sleeping state, we have our dreaming state, we have a deep sleep state. But the one thing that's always there is the consciousness going through all these states. It never ends. It's always there.
We are all consciousness. And guess what? Self-conscious. So we're able to choose. We're able to choose. We're able to consider. We're able to reason. In the front.
Do we ever come back in animal bodies?
I think this question was asked to Mr. Judge, and he said, it may not be unreasonable, but it wouldn't be fair. Because once a human, always a human. That animalistic nature is what we have passed down to the lower kingdoms. That ferociousness, that's in man's nature. The selfishness, the ability to choose me or you. Yes.
Oh, so don't we have all of these kingdoms within us? So like if you have, like wouldn't that be part of our lower nature? Would be that animal type?
Yes.
Aspect?
Yeah, look how intelligent it is. Look, it operates really without us even thinking about it. Hello, here I am, you know. And it just operates. Even if we're stupid or enlightened, it operates. So, what do we do? What do we do? How do we operate it? Well, if you understand karma and reincarnation, but that, you don't have to understand. You guys have to realize that we're eternal beings. And how can we move, or why would we move forward? We're moving forward in this wave of evolution. This wave. And we're part of it. So we're being shown how to ride that wave and to see above what's really going on. So, there are basic truths, basic understandings, which pervade this philosophy. Check, test, and verify. Don't believe anything anyone tells you. In the very back.
Well, the reason, though, that our lower nature just acts as it wants to act is because we, as the driver of it or the head of it, are not paying any attention. We've created habits, and we're not about to change them, so we just let it be.
That's the result of people not knowing about reincarnation and karma. You know, that the taming of the horse is our body. It is a physical being that operates through our nature, our feeling nature. And that part of our feeling nature, you know, is feeling. But it's also an understanding of the oneness of all of life. That is our plug-in to everyone. We just have to find it. We have to find, how do we plug into this life, other life form?
Well, there are a lot of folks who will admit to or recognize the unity of all of life, who will see the value of universal brotherhood and accept that we all are one family, and who darn well look forward to going to heaven when they die. If they were to consider and accept the idea of reincarnation, how might that change the way they think or act?
Well, someone who does good for the sake of doing good, for themselves, yes, but for their children, for their grandchildren, for those that come after them, takes a profound understanding of life. So we see that all the time. It's our wanting to protect those that we love. But we need to love everyone and see how we can alleviate the suffering everywhere. So, but, you know, the question is, you start with yourself. You start with yourself. Look within and untangle the web that we've created. Our journey is, as the Gita says, is in every moment of the day, not looking for the results of our actions, doing that which needs to be done, unattached. And giving it up, well, maybe to the community, but giving it up to the highest. That which is beyond. But it's for everyone. Our actions. So, you know, it becomes a personal journey. No one can judge you and no one can tell you what to do. It's a individual choice and journey.
And we see examples of that idea every day. When you go to the flower shop, or you happen to be out west where they're breeding cattle and so forth, or even in a laboratory where the chemist is working on some particular group of minerals to produce a medicine, what is the aim and purpose? As far as we thinkers and human beings are concerned?
Well, oftentimes we think, well, we're doing nothing by studying these ideas. We're doing nothing. Why aren't we out laboring in some way? But the ideas are what are out there, but people do not know how to discuss them or how to talk about them. People were having difficulty right now talking to each other. So it's the communication that we have with life, that electromagnetic communication. It's called our astral self, our astral body. That's our real body. And that is part of our feeling nature, to know that, you know, that we are electromagnetic. Yes?
Tying that in with the earlier comment, the one who is loving even if only to his own immediate or her own immediate circle, earns the right that love brings to, in the next life or perhaps the one after, read a book or meet someone, or someone contacts him in a mental way so that they are awakened a little bit. Love can never do harm. It always brings a good in some aspect of our life.
Because it's a divine quality. It's like a child that we miss growing up, but that same love, that same feeling, even as they grow older.
So for then, for the purpose who does, who is an ethical person and who finds it natural to be of service and to love all the people around them who are like them, when they come in contact then in some life with this idea of reincarnation and karma, even though they are born into and are experiencing their own type of culture, what is it about reincarnation and karma that might or might not help them see universal brotherhood more clearly or have a deeper understanding of it?
Well, it's a difficult conversation to have in a few moments, because there's so much involved with this idea. The whole philosophy is involved with this idea. It's but a single portion of this understanding of cause and effect, of this motion, this going forth, this vibration from which we all, from which the universe has come forth. It's a vibration. And we're all vibrations. We're all like a fire, a consuming fire. So that, you know, it's the idea that we are eternal. Reincarnation is the only way that we can understand it, that we grow through reincarnation. It's a natural process. It is simply a change of consciousness. It's a change of consciousness. And that's what our life is. These changes of consciousness. And it was said earlier, you know, every day we have different states of consciousness. We all lay our head down at night and go to bed and go to sleep. And sometimes we go to somewhere else. So we're active on other planes. And we're just trying to give our body a break. But if we did not sleep properly and restless, we do not rest or have that restful sleep or that connection. And the next day we are often irritated and unsettled. So there's a rhythm. And we just have to find that rhythm and try to work within it. So not that anything that you would do is wrong, but nothing you do is right or only works for you. So we're all in that sort of place or position.
So if the object of incarnation is learning and the process is reincarnation, then if one starts to really think about it, well then, I'm not stuck being a white woman. It's as simple as that. And as I look around at others, I can realize I have been that or I will be that. And it makes you more charitable to everybody, because how are you acting right now in your position? And how would you act if you were in another? It makes you so full of questions and hope and idealism.
I sort of stopped at white woman.
Yeah.
Yeah, really.
Not proud of it either.
Well.
No. With the oppressors, the greeders, the grabbers, even though we've done good things, it doesn't outweigh the negative.
Well, it's a stark realization of really where life is. The consciousness of the planet is changing, and that these ideas are just breaking the surface. And many women are still slaves, and they keep on bringing these programs that you see, they still have slaves in Africa, people that take a gunpoint and turn them into slaves, beat them, and it's like a very bad movie. And they show it on the news. But the only way you can protect yourself against this is by having your mind centered in reality.
But I don't want to protect myself from it. I want to go and fight it and change it.
Well, no. But the protection that you need from it is how the heaviness and the astral presence of that in the world is evident. And the more sympathetic you become, the more you are affected by it. You need to protect yourself. You know, and as all people should. That the seeming cause needs to be, you know, attacked, and there needs to be, who knows? Yes.
The shortest line in the Bible, Jesus wept.
Yes.
So
that did Buddha.
Is not lack of sympathy.
No.
I think we have to keep the sympathy and keep ourselves on a state of consciousness that says we are all one, no matter what's going on in the universe. It will work itself out. But I think in the meantime, we have to be sympathetic and active.
Yes, we cannot argue with that.
Good.
Nor dare we. Over here? Yeah. Yes.
I've listened and I kind of agree with most of what's been said, but also I kind of believe that our consciousness on some level is fixed, and that's how we're able to reincarnate, otherwise we wouldn't be who we are in this condition.
Right.
So that being said, I think regardless of what my physical conditions are, and regardless of what my natal birth is or where I'm born or what country or nation or whatever, et cetera, I think regardless of all those things, I think not necessarily being proud, but being aware, being confident and being content and grateful with who you are is important for you to move forward. So I like to say that I hope that anybody, whatever condition they're in or whoever they feel like they are in terms of their conditions, their physical conditions, they can still maintain their consciousness and say, you know, this is who I am in this and now, not necessarily who I'm going to be tomorrow, necessarily who I was.
Yes. I mean, always hopeful, always positive.
But content and grateful, too.
And grateful, yes. Yeah. Yes.
I'm proud of
women. And proud?
Yeah, I'm proud of women, sure.
Yeah, I think that's a noble pursuit. And we all should pursue in our own way, our own journey. Yes.
But isn't there, like, the voice of the silence and stillness, isn't there an impersonal nature to that? That's the ever unknowable... ultimate, absolute, like, consciousness? I mean, isn't there an impersonal nature to that?
Yes, there is. There is that exactly. You know, it's something which we do not talk about because we can't describe it. Because it's eternal, it's boundless, it's immutable, and it's omnipresent. It's consciousness itself. Did you have a question?
Sure, well, we can talk about using these conditions, however, in impersonal ways. You know, it, I mean, just the basis for so many of these teachings is that, you know, stop deceiving yourself. You're not a purple person. You're a being in incarnation. You're not male or female. That's just the conditions that you're experiencing right now. And the more that we identify with those conditions, is the more likely we're going to be born right back into those conditions, and it's the more likely we're going to separate ourselves and see differences and separations among all the people. So when we start simply taking these ideas out into the world, we don't really learn universal brotherhood in this room. We hear about the ideas. We learn it when we go out there and apply these ideas. And if we apply, one way to apply them to ourselves is to dismiss that I am a this religion, a that political, a this sex, or that race. Just operate as best you can with, you know, I, thou, rather than mine and yours.
All through the history of mankind, and even the Theosophical movement, personalities have always gotten in the way. Always personalities. Always people who tweaked the philosophy so they could call it their own. Did this, did that. Say they were the next coming. And taught these ideas openly and said, you know, and then you had to follow them. You know, no. You have a follow-up or anything?
We heard this statement, never say die. And other short phrases that we pick up that we sort of remember. And we hear the term try. We see around us old gray-haired men teaching a group of young men how to be able to be better in whatever profession or task they're undertaking. So there must be some purpose to the idea of re-embodiment, etc., and so forth. Could you give us just a simple picture of the aim and the purpose? And who am I and what am I?
Well, we have to understand that we're in motion. We're moving. We don't perceive it. We perceive the motion of the earth. We perceive that around the moon or the moon around the earth and us around the sun. We're well aware of that. But us in the universe, spinning in the universe into other space, constantly moving, ever so imperceptibly by our measure of time. So,
we haven't much talked about the I itself, and that's what's involved in reincarnation. And that I is a permanent consciousness, an individuality. It has no gender, it has no race, it is consciousness, spiritual thinker who incarnates into the various races and experiences. So that I is the receptacle and the learner from these experiences. So if we can keep that in mind, we can realize that reincarnation is the opportunity to fix your problems, correct your mistakes, and try to help others.
Yes, because guess what? Everything that's coming to you is...
Everything.
That's, everything that is coming to you is what you've set up in the past. and you're just reaping the fruits of it at this light in this lifetime. So the answer to the problem is only that, first, it's not a problem, it's an opportunity to make different choices and how it affects you. That this is, life is a joy and an opportunity. And just do our best and keep on trying. And keep on trying to understand these ideas and be able to express them to others around us without it being a labor, without it being a project, by just being who we are. And that we do by just trying to be present in the moment. Not thinking of what you want to say or just being present and staring at someone. Well, the idea of reincarnation gives us hope that we will be coming back and facing much of the same problems that we are facing now. They don't disappear. They go back into their constituent parts of nature. And we, remember, we are an electrodynamic being. Electromagnetic. So we attract back to ourselves these feelings, and they call them skandhas or qualities, back to ourselves. And lo and behold, here we are again. But we just don't remember that we were here before, but then we get an inkling that the longer we work on a problem, we know that it's not going to take one lifetime. So these ideas are ancient. They are not the possession of any one person. They're the possession of all of us. So these ideas will set you free. These ideas will give you an avenue in which you can express ideas or thoughts by using your mind in abstract ways. So we're like a school here. We all come in and have lectures, and we try to listen and understand what's being talked about and hopefully digest it and ask questions, but it's not now, later. Let's think about the ideas and how we're all part of it. It's not a individual effort. The presentation of the ideas is, but our willingness to listen and consider them. And these doors, this building is kept open. These teachings are kept alive in the community through voluntary contributions of time, service, and money. All are welcome to participate, but there is nothing is implied or inferred. Or inferred or implied. Meeting adjourned. Hey, look who it is. Yeah, still back there. They didn't move it.